take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Yep. All right. Good morning, everybody. We had last hour and considered the state of the world and politics and what's happened with McCain and all the rest of it. And this hour, we're going to be joined by Beverly Jaggers. And she's one of the big names in the world in things paranormal. And a lot of people have been urging me to have her on, so she's coming up in a moment. Bev Jaggers. Try scratching your head a little bit. Do I know that name? Well, if not, you will. This is kind of interesting, just before Bev here. 23 Feb 2000, geomagnetic activity has subsided after an interplanetary shock front passed Earth February 20th. The reprieve will be very short-lived, though, because a large coronal hole is rotating across the sun's central meridian. High-speed solar wind particles from this hole will likely collide with Earth's atmosphere and trigger yet more geomagnetic activity, including aurora, later this week. So the sun is really doing its thing up there. Now, Beverly Jaggers, this was the fax, or actually email, I guess, that finally propelled me into getting her on the air. A lot of people wrote to me and said, you've got to get her on. It says, the person who wrote this said Beverly got into this field as a skeptic and was soon proving to herself that something is in fact going on with the whole paranormal phenomena. Since that time, she has self-taught herself psychic skills, formed the group U.S. Psi Squad, PSI Squad. It's important to note that she says she has no natural psychic skills, but instead has trained herself to be able to access these areas in her mind. And she's presently involved with teaching others how to do what she has done. Is that a fair assessment, Beverly?
Very close.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What is this U.S. Psi Squad?
It's the only group in the world, as far as we know, of all trained people trained to use Psi. It's composed of police officers and some civilians, mostly male, all very intelligent, who offer services to the police pro bono.
Pro bono. Free. It translates, folks, free. In other words, you help the police out for free.
Yes. I'm a third-generation cop myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that would account for some, then, of your favored bias toward the police. That's good.
We consider it public service.
Public service. Well, all right. Then how do you survive? I mean, if you are doing this full-time, for example, for the police, how do you eat? What brings in the bread?
I'm a professional journalist. I write articles, columns, whatever. I write for quite a few magazines, and Atlantis Rising is one of those, and that's how the bread comes in.
Okay. All right. How old are you now?
A little older than you.
Well, that's all right. You can tell us how old.
No, I can't.
Oh, really? You mean...
Oh, we don't want to tell anybody how old I am, and they think that, oh, heavens, I mean, this person couldn't know anything. They're over 30.
Oh, come on now.
Shady. Shady side, yes.
What is it with women and their age, anyway?
I have no idea.
Yes, you do. You know, you should know about these things, so tell me. What is it about women and their age? They won't tell their age.
Either
that or they don't tell the right age.
Isn't that? I was conditioned by the 60s. Don't talk to anybody over 30.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm sorry, Art. I have a sense of humor.
No, that's good.
If you really want to know, I'll email you.
You'll email me?
Yeah, I'll send you my heart.
What I really want to know is why women are so sensitive about their age.
I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. On the shady side of 60, how's that?
Does that mean almost 60 or just a little over 60 or hovering around 60?
Hovering around, yes.
Hovering around. All right, that's fine. When did you realize you had this talent?
Oh, I didn't. I didn't have it. I was as psychic as a bag of rocks.
Hmm.
No, being a writer, I was looking for something that no one else had written about, something that had been written to death. And I fell upon the science press, because I'm a science writer, and they were writing about what the Russians were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were training ordinary people to use these abilities. Well,
That
hadn't been written much, so I set out to do some research on that. And I found out they were teaching ordinary people to use these skills that we consider paranormal.
Okay, let's talk about what these skills are. What are we talking about here? Are we talking about the ability to read minds? Are we talking about the ability to do remote viewing? I'm familiar with most of, you know, what's going on out there. What is it you're talking about?
Yes, sir, all of those. They were working very hard on all of those things. And, in fact, it was apparently in reaction to what they thought we were doing in this country that it heated up so much in the 60s and ended up in the press.
Well, we always reacted to each other.
Of course.
If we thought they were doing it, then we had to do it and do it better.
Of course. And so I had to start with what was in the science press at the time, 61, 62. And then I had to eventually develop a tap-in where I could get some stuff direct from the source.
What do you mean the source?
That was coming out of Russia itself, and later two gals wrote a book about that.
Oh, you mean you wanted to know what the Russians were doing and how they were doing it?
Yeah, if they were going to teach ordinary people, I wanted to know just why. What did you have to do, you know,
uh-huh.
Take off your clothes and dance around a candle or what? And it turned out not to be that at all. And after a little while, I got intrigued and tried to learn some of these things myself.
Suppose it had been that. Stripping down naked and dancing around a candle, Beverly, would you have done that?
No. Probably not.
Absolutely not, huh?
No, I had six kids. That wouldn't have been... No.
That wasn't it. So then what was it? In other words, we're talking about the Cold War. I mean, not a lot of information came out of Russia about this kind of thing or anything else for that matter.
Well, I'll tell you, the Iron Curtain slammed down in 64 when they were able to stop the Heart of a Frog. Until that time, they were open and just suddenly everything went away.
Wait a minute. You said stop the Heart of a Frog.
Yes.
Are you sure about that?
Well, that was the report, and what other reason was there for that curtain to slam like that? They were very interested in remote influence.
Oh, okay. Let's see what we're talking about when we talk about stopping the Heart of a Frog, or any other heart for that matter. Is that telekinesis?
It's a form of it. It's called remote influencing.
Ah, yes, remote influencing. As you know, I've probably interviewed most of the people involved in the U.S. remote viewing program, at least the ones who have decided to become public.
Right.
And when you ask them about remote influencing, they usually get quiet for a few seconds. And they're not comfortable talking a lot about it. And, you know, some of them hint that, yeah, you know, it might indeed be possible. Others say, no, not that I've seen. You got to read between the lines, but a lot of them seem to know that something happened.
Well, that's what happened. It was done, and we knew who did it. and it eventually killed the operator, and...
What?
The individual who did it. It takes so much energy that... physical energy, that it eventually ended up with the individual not being with us anymore, or with them. So it was a, at the time, it was a something to slam the door down on.
Well, that almost sounds a little like, you know, 3 times 3 times 3, a little bit of witchcraft and karma. In other words, you stop another's heart, and your heart might stop itself.
I don't think it's a recommended skill, but that cut off the flow of information for a long time. It was very difficult to go on without special help from other directions.
Well, if you kill a frog...
Not me.
If anybody kills a frog by stopping its heart, then they could kill a human being in the same manner.
I suppose.
And if they were able to kill with the mind, then our CIA and NSA and whoever, you know, the real spooks are, they'd be all over that like flies on you know what. Because they'd love to do that kind of thing. And if it looks like a heart attack, smells like a heart attack, and is autopsied like a heart attack, you don't have a better weapon than that.
No, you don't, but then you also have to ask yourself whether that was a completely healthy frog. So there were a lot of unanswered questions left hanging about. And in the remote viewing community, military in our group, it's a subject of discussion, but it's not anything that we're working on.
See, that's where I have a really hard time with this. You gotta love our government, Bev, mostly. I mean, anyway, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights and all that. But you and I both know, if you can kill with a mind, they'd be all over that, Beverly. They would no more let go of that than the man in the moon. And they'd be doing it today. And probably they are doing it today, if it's real.
Well, it was real there. They said it was. That was the information coming in from the USSR at the time. And it was very intriguing, but I was really more interested in the remote viewing and other aspects of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a frog.
Yeah, but you look at the work going on at Princeton,
yeah.
And it makes sense that it would work. Because if you with a human mind can influence a random number generator,
mm-hmm.
which they have proven,
mm-hmm.
I think conclusively at Princeton, then there's every reason to imagine that you could do other influencing at greater levels as you became more proficient. Kind of like biofeedback.
That is how why Uri Geller was originally recruited for the program, because he was purported to be able to do effects like that, not magically. And I don't know what occurred, but he apparently wasn't able to do what they thought he could do.
Hmm.
And he was originally recruited by one of the astronaut corps.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then he was put to the test. He had done some very interesting things, but he eventually fell back upon spoons and old watches.
Well.
And it just kind of dropped out of sight.
Well, what can really be done, Beverly?
In that field?
Well, and in all these related fields, what's real and what's baloney?
What's real is the fact that you can use your mind to see things at a distance. We do it to help solve crimes. We use it for archaeologists. We use it for... In fact, we just started a new program with some paleontology people.
Really?
And are able to see dinosaurs alive.
Alive?
Alive.
So, in other words... You could probably see them die, too. So you could tell a paleontologist where to dig.
Yes. We have. We've been involved in that with several groups of scientists and are doing it now, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Yes. The squad doesn't do just crime. We have to have other things to balance. So we do some of that kind of stuff, and for relaxation, I do Wall Street, so...
For relaxation, you do Wall Street.
Get into more of that as we go here, but What can you do?
Well, you just told me one. Now, let me stop you right there.
Yes.
Every psychic, everybody that we've had on the show, that's always been one of the questions from the audience. Well, if that person really knows what's going on, then why aren't they using it to their advantage? Why aren't they predicting what will occur on Wall Street and investing with their gleaned knowledge and making money?
We do. We are.
We do and we are, is the answer.
Yes. I was given a...
You know the answer I get from most of them? Most psychics? They say, if you were to use this power, say they, in that way, cosmically, ultimately, it wouldn't work out, that there's some sort of, you know, karmic price to pay for greedily using your ability to find out what's going to happen on the NASDAQ or the Dow the next day or the next week and or to any single company or something like that, and that the great moral and ethical code of the cosmos won't allow that to occur.
I see. So
in other words, that's baloney.
Yeah, I didn't come in that door. I'd never heard the word ESP. I was raised in a very anti-mystical family. I don't think anybody in the family ever knew a psychic, talked about one, ever been one, or been to one. Strictly, mostly cops.
All right, once again, here's Beverly Jaggers. Beverly, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. You predicted the shuttle disaster, didn't you?
Yes.
How did that happen? When did you know, and what did you do?
You want some more stories? Okay. Everything I tell you can be checked to the max.
Oh, I know. I've got some of the articles here, so I know. But
I was in Atlanta. We were working on the child murderers down there, of which they only put one behind bars. But anyway, Alan Vaughn was there. He had been sent by Stephen Schwartz. You know Stephen?
I do not.
He ran the Mobius project. That was the only realistic...
I know about the project.
Okay, well, that was Steve's project. And he had sent Alan to me with a sealed envelope because he knew that I don't like to see my target. And I got these outer space things, and I was a little aggravated with Alan because we were there to solve a crime, a terrible crime. And finally, I was waiting for the sketch artist to be free, and I took the envelope, and I'm seeing these outer space things. And then I got a picture of something I really didn't understand. What I called it was a wraparound ring, and it was around a booster rocket. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't seated properly. And it leaked, and then it exploded. The whole thing just came apart.
Of course, that's exactly what occurred. The O-ring seal was malfunctioned, and we were all able to see the ring of fire.
Absolutely.
And then the explosion. When did you get this information versus when it occurred?
March 13th, 1981.
March 13th. And what did you do with the information?
I didn't do anything with it. Alan recorded my voice, and he took it to a NASA engineer, Fred Kolb, apparently Steve was working with this engineer. What they were doing was, we hadn't flown the shuttle, and they wanted to know whether there were going to be any problems with it.
Right.
With the program. And so they came, or he sent Alan to Atlanta with this envelope, and this is what came down, so they stored it because it didn't have... I said it wasn't going to be the first shuttle. It was going to be a later shuttle. So they put it into the archives of the Mobius group, and when Challenger went down, it just verified the prediction.
Mm-hmm.
So a little while later, Time Life called me, and they said they were going to put this into a book. And at the time, I wasn't sure what I'd said, and so I asked for Alan's number, and they gave it to me, and I called him, and he said, everything I told him is 100%, Bev, because I have your voice saying so on tape. And the date was March 13th, 81. That was 5 years before the O-ring thing occurred.
I also have here, I want the public to know who they're dealing with when they hear you. I've got an article from the Business Journal.
Yeah.
And the Weekly. And it says, Bev Jagger's psychic picks baffle the experts, but fare well. And in here, it says that you made some guy $1 million just telling him what coffee futures to buy.
Well, can I tell that exactly the way it occurred?
Please do, yes.
I was on a local television show with some people talking about criminal work that we do.
Yes.
And this individual called and he said he had a business question. He didn't say who he was or what kind of question it was. And
right.
I told him to put the envelope, put it in an envelope, bring it over to my office on Saturday.
Yes.
And when I took it, I started seeing these weird bushes with red berries and people picking them, and there weren't too many, and they were all dried up, and I didn't know what I was seeing, so I looked at him, and he was grinning from ear to ear. And he said, just go right on. He was a Texan. And so I did that, and when I got finished, I said, well, it looks like a clock's going to fail. I don't know what that could have to do with business. And then he told me that he was a futures investor. And I didn't know futures from futons at the time, but I understood that if he bought them at today's price, that if the crop failed, then he should make some money.
Big time.
So he bought 200 contracts, $24,000. That's all the money he had in the world. And I was terrified because what if I was wrong? And so after an amount of time, they hadn't really moved yet, although it had. There had been a terrible freeze in
California. If I may, let me ask this: how did you identify the fact that they were coffee beans?
Well, apparently that's what was in the envelope. He didn't tell me until I had finished what I was doing.
I see.
He had written coffee futures.
I see. And so he picked the target.
Yeah.
You got the envelope. You said a massive crop failure. He smiled. He invested all his money, and he made more than $1 million.
He made almost $2 million, and he gave me $60,000. Well, he bought me a house.
He bought you a house?
He bought me a house. And it was on television and on the AP wire, and went out all over the country, and everybody in the world wanted me to make them a millionaire, too.
I'm sure.
But I had had practically hysterics waiting for him to get his multi-million in, and I didn't want to be responsible for somebody else's money. Mine, that's different.
Huh.
Then I bought a contract for myself in rubber futures, and he said, oh, that's silly. They're downsizing cars. That's going to be just a disaster. It tripled in a couple of weeks, and I bought it out, and I built myself a new kitchen.
I see. So then, again, circling back to where I was, this stuff about there being some moral imperative not to use psychic power for these kinds of things is baloney, basically.
Well, we don't believe it's a power in the first place.
A psychic ability?
We call it HCA, human cognitive abilities.
Human cognitive abilities. All right. Rose, by any other name, still tells you which stock or future to go buy. So using it in that way is not inappropriate.
Well, if you learned to play the piano well enough, you would be paid to play for Carnegie Hall. If you learned to play tennis well enough...
That's right.
If you learned to play golf well enough, you'd be Tiger Woods.
That's right.
So we don't see that there's any cosmic reason why we shouldn't be able to eat and pay our bills.
I don't either.
No.
I never have. It's just that the skeptics always use that as the big challenge to anybody claiming psychic ability. Well, then why aren't you predicting the stock market? Well, you have.
Yeah, we have. Yes, we do. And for 9 years, I've been doing a thing for a gentleman in New York who does a newsletter called Financial Foresight. He has me run the Dow for each month of the following year. And he has sent out a letter all over heaven gone that I have a 90 percentile correct ratio on that.
90%?
Nine years of it.
Wow.
I would be glad to send you the letter if you'd like to see it.
I absolutely believe every bit of it because I've got so much documentation here.
I've never met the gentleman, as a matter of fact.
No?
Also, I was doing that pro bono. I did that for a reason because it stretches the muscles and he keeps the track record.
Yeah, right. A good friend of mine knows you, Colonel John Alexander. You know?
Oh, yes.
Colonel, okay, good.
I know John well, and Brad.
Yes, oh, yes.
And also the gathering of eagles that you had.
Yes.
Which is when I became an Art Bell listener.
Really? That was the whole group of publicly known remote viewers.
Right. Now, I did not learn the military way. I learned different. It came from an earlier time, and it came right out of the Soviet. So it was different. I'm not a military remote viewer. I don't pretend to be. But we have a close association, and that's why I spoke at the conference last year, and I'll be speaking at the next.
Mm-hmm. I have been really intrigued with the idea of remote viewing because I think it's real.
It is.
I know. And I as yet have not taken the steps to begin to try to acquire the ability myself to teach. I have a number of tapes and instructors and so forth, and for some reason I've not wanted to do this. My understanding of remote viewing is that you can look not just across geographic areas, but, in fact, through time, forward and back?
Yes.
That really is true?
Absolutely. When you're doing a future thing like the Tao, you have to mentally tell yourself an exact time that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. In other words, it would be really wonderful to know what AT&T was doing a year ago. But you want to know what it's going to be next month.
Well, with regard to the stock market, definitely the future would be the way to go. Oh, yeah.
Well, Challenger was another case in point. I didn't know that I was skipping time. It just occurred.
So it's not even a barrier that you consciously break through when you remote view. If that's where it goes, that's where it goes.
Yes, sir. To be accurate, I mean, we've been testing this for years both ways. We started out doing reconstructing what happened during the crime,
mm-hmm.
Which is the work of the squad. And so we will be given certain items from the crime scene, and from that we will reconstruct what happened during the crime and possibly just before, because that might be evidential. It usually is.
Okay, here's a tough one for you. I have heard from a number of remote viewers that they who have worked with the police, that they really can't stand doing that kind of work because you literally have to live that crime, that you literally remote view that crime, and that takes so much out of you to do. I suppose it would, you know, vary depending on individuals, but to have to remote view a crime like that,
Only usually the first time. And if I'm training somebody and they can't handle that, then they go no further with that.
Mm.
We'll sidetrack them into something that they prefer. Maybe archaeology is their...
Is it really that hard? In other words, if you view a brutal crime that's taken place,
yeah.
Do you, in essence, live that crime to be able to understand what occurred?
Hopefully not, no. The first time you ever try something like that, it can be traumatic for a while. But after that, you become more like, let's say, an emergency medical tech. They see the worst of the worst.
Right.
And if you've ever been around a deadly accident like that, then you might have some idea. The media shields us from that. But...
Yes, I know.
When you can see something like that, you don't want yourself to be a part of it. It isn't important to feel the pain. And the kind of thing that we're usually called in on is unsolved homicides. So almost all of our work in that area is a traumatic in the extreme.
Yeah, I mean, you said, did you say you were a cop once?
My dad was a police officer. My uncle and my dad were both police detectives. My grandfather was a police detective.
Right.
My brother was a police officer. And I tried really hard to be one, but my dad wouldn't let me. So I came in through the back door as a private eye.
Well, I worked with the police as a dispatcher for years.
Did you?
Actually, a year, to be specific. 1 year. And cops are an entirely different breed. They begin to get really cynical about people.
Some of them do, sure.
Most of the ones I met did, and I knew a lot of them. I mean, a lot of them handled it in okay ways, and they blew off steam in okay ways, but it was getting to them, and it got to me. I mean, when you see the way people treat each other and terrible crimes all the time, it's a very myopic view of humanity, and it tends to make you kind of cynical after a while about humanity.
Police officers work with bottom feeders and trauma, of course.
That's it. Exactly that.
And I was raised around that, so I knew about that.
So when you remote view situations like this, you're hardened enough to be able to do it in enough of a detached way to keep yourself together.
Yeah, it's not exactly hardening, but amongst the police officers that are in the squad who've been trained to use ESP, when you get past that hard exterior, you find the kindest, nicest people you'd ever hope to know. Someday I'll introduce you to the group.
Yeah, they're good people.
They are good people, absolutely. And I'm proud to be working with them.
And they're doing a terribly hard job.
Yeah.
Really, really a hard job.
One of the worst we ever had was a drug enforcement undercover girl who had been sliced with razors. And that was horrendous because, in a way, it was one of us. We have worked several cases of police officer down, and none of us take that lightly.
Yeah, I know. I had that occur to me when I was dispatching a police officer down, shot in the stomach, actually. He recovered, but boy.
Well, we've had a couple that the officer was just left lying there. No one knew what had happened or how it happened. And we were asked to reconstruct because there was no evidence. And you asked me once whether we were called in as a last resort.
Yes.
No, we were called in when the car was still on the roadside. Late the same day.
So in other words, whatever police department this is, and we won't say, I guess, it doesn't matter. The very serious crime involving a police officer's life, and they called you not as a last resort, but as a first resort. Now, most Americans think that psychics are only called in on cases that the police can't solve, been working on for a long time, have no leads, nothing to go on whatsoever. Then they pick up the telephone and call somebody like you. Not true, huh?
No. Not in the majority of cases. We work with police departments from here to wherever. We're working one right now in California. We're in Missouri. But that has nothing to do with it because it really doesn't matter where it is. It's the job they're giving us. But a lot of times they will call us in while the crime is still hot.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Is it better for you as a psychic to be called in while the evidence is still warm, so to speak?
Yes, just like it is for them. There's a golden 36 hours.
Right.
And if we get in, it's the same for us as it is for the police officers that we're working with. Because if we're there at approximately sometime in that 36 hours, it's easier for us to work.
Any idea why that is true in the world, in the psychic world?
I hate that word.
Well, all right, in the PSI world, in the world of... You pick the word. What do you like?
Sensitive.
Sensitive. All right.
We have to get a whole new vocabulary going here. I've been fighting that for the last 30-some years.
Uh-huh.
Because the emotions are still there. The emotion is what we get a hold of.
I've got you. All right, Bev, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. So in other words, when the emotions are strong, and they apparently fade after the event to some degree, when they're stronger, then the information gleaned is stronger.
You showed me how to do exactly what you do, how I fell in love with you.
As bold as a knight should be, he rode an old gray mare called Bess, searching for a damsel in distress, just to see if he could set her free.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, good morning. Beverly Jaggers is here, and she is the real McCoy. A sensitive. A psychic. She didn't like that word. I don't know. We'll talk a little bit about that, the words and the whole image thing. She works with police departments pro bono, that means for free, and has for years. She's made people rich with her ability. She's solved crimes with her ability. She's predicted shuttle disasters with her ability. And that's what we're talking about this morning. Her ability. Nothing different than you could do. You could do it if you wanted to, and I'm sure she'll touch on that. Here we are again, once again, the ageless Beverly Jaggers.
Okay.
All right. Listen, let's talk a little bit about emotions. In other words, you say close to like the police, there is the very best chance they will solve a crime in the first, 36 hours. After that, the trail starts getting cold. And you say it's roughly the same for you.
Yes.
The emotions begin to sort of fade from wherever they're held.
It doesn't mean you can't do it.
I hear you.
It's hot at the time. It's like yesterday's tan cakes. If it goes too long, but we can do it, but it just is better if we get in when
soon,
right after something happens.
Hmm. I want to talk to you for that. You objected to the word psychic, and I kind of don't blame you. I mean, most Americans' exposure to psychics is late-night TV, where they got three or four girls sitting around, you know,
yeah,
and the screen says, certified psychics.
Yeah.
I always wondered what that was, how you get certified as a psychic. And they would always proclaim things to people on the phone, like, you were with another woman last night, weren't you? And you hear a click, you know, and that's supposed to be the proof. And so I suppose that's the image that you're fighting all the time when people use that word, huh?
Absolutely.
Hmm.
There's one in... anytime you turn on the television set, there's a gang of them sitting there. I will say that there are a lot of women who are more sensitive to personalities of that. We've seen a distinct difference between male and female in this particular profession. And they,
Is there now?
Yeah.
In other words, females are more naturally intuitive.
Yeah, they are. And we do a lot of profiling. And sometimes the women in the squad are maybe better at that than the men are. The women are more likely to say this guy likes cats. And the men are more likely to say he drives a broken down red 4x4.
So the difference between the sexes extends itself even to what you're likely to read, which means that you're reading from your, to some degree, from your own perspective, something I thought that everybody tried to eliminate in doing this kind of sensitive receiving.
It's just a natural thing that occurs.
Yeah.
Men have more facility with the facts, just the facts, man. Where if we're doing a profile, that cat thing might be and has been important. And I seem to be flat down in the middle because I can go either way with that. It depends on the job. And the jobs that we're asked to do are frequently ones that require more of the hard stuff.
Than
what kind of person, or whether he likes cats. And as I say, it has been important, and it is important, but the majority of the squad are male. And that's because of the kind of work we get asked to do.
And yet, according to what you just said, the female component of any squad would be perhaps even critical to the job.
Yeah. We don't eliminate them. I mean, there's not a sex barrier here. But the majority, say, 2 out of 10 or 12 are female.
Huh. And it usually takes a team of that size to go after a project, a major murder case or something. You would apply that many people to a project like that?
As many as we have that are free and available. I mean, sometimes I've had to work alone because there was no one available. We all work. And if it came down in the afternoon, then only I could go. So that's just the way that would be. Then they would give me something to take back to the group because they knew about the group. And I had to sign for that because if you've done any police work, you're familiar with chain of evidence.
Oh, yes.
I can sign for that with a private detective license. And have.
No kidding.
Yes, sir.
You can sign for it.
Yes, sir. Officially.
Wow, isn't that something? I take it that a lot of the specific cases that you've worked on you can't talk about? Or can you talk in general about them?
Oh, I can talk in specific about some of them. Would you like to hear a serial killer case? We've handled several, but this one was most interesting, and it involved the whole squad eventually. A young girl was kidnapped from a neighboring community in Illinois, and the chief of police telephoned me the very next day and said that she hadn't gotten home the night before from a school play, and that they were quite worried about what might have happened to her. So I told him what I would need, and he sent a detective over with a picture of the girl and her jacket that she hadn't worn that night. It was kind of warm. And from that, I could tell that she had been kidnapped, raped, and murdered, and the body was discarded like an old glove. And so they didn't like to hear that, and of course neither did I, but that was the fact. So the question was then, where is she?
Yeah, sure.
So I asked them to bring over a utility company map, which is big scale. One town is huge. So following down that map, I got a hot spot, and I made an X with a circle in it.
Right.
And I gave it back to the officer, and he went back, and it was late in the evening when we did that. The next morning, she was found exactly where the X was. And they sent a car to bring me over to the site immediately, as soon as they'd taken the body away, to find out more. I had a sketch of the individual. He had long sideburns like Elvis Presley. And his name began with a B. And then they asked me where he lived. And I indicated an area in the town. And then they let me have the socks that had been on the body to take back to the squad. And the next thing that was done was that I told him that he was an individual who'd done something similar to that before. He was going to do it again, but they would catch him in the commission of one of these crimes. About a week later, he took a girl out of a drive-up window at a bank, and the officer in charge of that didn't want to work with the squad. So we had to work under the counter with Chief Beal, who had called us in on the first girl. And about 2 weeks later, after they found the second body, he took another girl out of a laundromat. But she got away, and she remembered enough of the license plate to describe this individual, who was then picked up and thrown in jail. And then the chief, seeing the resemblances, went in, and they leaned on him just a little bit, and he eventually admitted that he had committed all of those other crimes. And his name was Bowman.
Well, you know, Beverly, I guess once you're established, it's fine. But if I was a cop, if I was a homicide detective, and you were actually able to take a map and put an X where the body would be found the next day, I would consider you a prime suspect.
Yeah. We've been suspected a time or two.
Have you? I mean, it would be a natural thing. It's a terrible thing to say, but it would be an automatic thing for any detective who would have, you know, some doubts about the ability of a sensitive like yourself. And yet when you called it and he saw it, the detective in him would say, there's no way in hell she knew. Either she really is a sensitive as she claims, or she has something to do with this crime. That would be a detective.
That happened on one of the first squad cases. It was a missing woman. We were able to find the body. In fact, we were doing a foot search, and we were in the area, but it got dark. We had to go home.
Right.
The next morning, it was just pouring rain, and we just couldn't get out there to that area again. But the police knew where we'd been searching because they had let me sit in this woman's car.
Right.
And they found her body that afternoon, and I was telephoned and told that they'd found Sally Lucas, and I said, where? And they said, about 15 yards from where you were searching last night. But when we first got into it, there was a little bit of hinky amongst the police as to whether we had anything to do with it.
Did they bring you in and have a little talk with you?
Briefly. They didn't understand what we were doing. Back then, this whole psychic field was kind of new, and they were not used to the fact that people could do this kind of thing. And it's not just us. I mean, I've trained the whole squad. I've trained all kinds of people. I would be more than happy to train you.
I don't know if I want to know, Beverly. I've been throwing this one around in my own mind for a long time. I believe what you're telling me is absolutely true.
Yes, sir.
But I mean, in some ways, it's a blessing, but in some ways, I'll bet it's a burden, too.
You have to learn to shut it off when you're not using it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like your radio. When you're done with your show, you shut it off and you go do the game.
I've never been good at shutting things off. That's why I did not stay a dispatcher in Monterey County, because I kept taking it home with me. I couldn't stop thinking about it. If somebody was killed, no matter how good a job you do in getting the response there and the rest of it, it weighs so heavily on you, and you sit and you dissect whether you did the right thing, whether if you'd done something else you could have saved somebody's life. Too much responsibility, way too much responsibility, Beverly. That's how I reacted to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does happen to people that would like to be part of the group, and for that very reason, they may drop out because they can't handle that kind of... There is an adrenaline rush when you're working a case,
mm-hmm.
especially a big case.
Mm-hmm.
And it carries you. You don't sleep, you don't eat until you've got something you can give them.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's what I mean. That's a pretty heavy endeavor to begin, and once you have acquired that ability. Now, let's talk about, I guess you're saying that everybody has the ability to learn if they want to.
Yes, sir.
To do what you do.
Yes, sir.
And yet there are natural sensitives, aren't there? Like, Ingo Swann, for example.
I knew Ingo.
I talked to Ingo here just a couple of weeks ago. We keep missing each other trying to get a date set up. We're going to have him on the air. But, I mean, he's a natural psychic, right?
He's never told me any different. When I met him with Suzelle Truman, Alex Tanis and Ingo and Ron Warmoth and there were so many of them, but Ron eventually came to realize that he too had been trained by his mother, who used to give him envelopes with photographs in them, which is a training technique and can be used. And Ingo never was forthcoming about how he started.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, how is it that we do this, Beverly? Can you explain that at all? When I say we, I mean those who are able to do what you do. What is it, a natural function of the brain? Is it a sixth sense? What is it?
Well, you know, there are people who make their living tasting coffee or smelling perfume. I can tell you exactly what went into it, what field it came from, what year it was bottled. The government has a whole crew of people who do the same thing to tell you whether food is tainted. So that's an extension of the natural sense. I believe that ESP should be extended sensory perception, not extra. We don't feel it's anything extra at all. I've never found anybody I couldn't train, and I prefer to teach people like policemen, pilots. A pilot will tell you, no matter how complex the instrumentation, he flies by the seat of his pants.
Well, again, consider a homicide detective. I would imagine it would be invaluable to use, to have a homicide detective trained to be sensitive and use that along with all his other learned abilities as a police officer, a detective, right?
Absolutely. That's, may I tell you a story about a bomb?
Sure. A bomb?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
One of the members of the squad, just was a chief of police, told me, and the whole gang recently, that he had been informed that there was a bomb threat in his district, and he was ordered to evacuate a hospital and a college for X number of blocks around the site. And he refused to do that. He put his job on the line.
I think that I remember that headline. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, he had remote viewed the bomb, and it wasn't a bomb, it was a dummy. But,
and you're telling me that's how he made his decision?
Absolutely. He just could describe the bag and where it was. And when they converged on the place where the bomb was, he told them right where to find it and what it looked like.
And what, in fact, was it?
It was a dummy. It was a piece of pipe in a satchel.
Yep. That's the story I read, all right. You're absolutely right. I wondered about that at the time.
Well, like I say, his neck was on the line there, but this happened. It went down just exactly the way I'm telling you, because he could see that there was no bomb in that bag.
Yeah, but boy, talk about, I guess if you know, you know, but you're right. He had his neck out on the line there.
Another police officer was driving down the street, and he scanned some boxes by the roadside. And he pulled over and investigated the boxes, and he found the proceeds of a home burglary, the kind of thing that you'd expect, VCR, radio, jewelry.
Right.
And then he cast around a little bit, and in his mind, he saw a certain face. He knew the face because he had arrested this person. So he went into the station, and they said, well, there's a burglary just happened in, let's say, Sunrise Hills. And he said, yes, I know, and the guy you want to pick up is Sam Smith. And they said, well, how do you know that? And he says, well, I have the proceeds that he dropped on the roadside in the back of the squad car. They picked him up, and guess who? He was the burglar.
This is pretty wild stuff.
It's true.
How many police departments nationwide are beginning to use sensitives, either early on, if there's been a lot of success, and or as a last resort? I mean, we're not told about it. Please don't really talk about it publicly.
Mm-hmm.
They will occasionally admit to consulting with psychics. That's pretty rare. But, I mean, in cases that get solved,
there are three people that I know of who can claim at least 100 under their belt. They are not associated with the squad, but they're people that I know. And Dorothy Allison, who recently died, was one of those. Mary Renier, Nancy Setley, our group. Between ourselves, probably 500 police departments.
500 police departments.
But we don't talk about a case we're working on.
I understand, yes.
We have to know that. If, when the case is over, yeah, if somebody wants to let it out, then they'll come and ask us whether we were involved in this case.
But the police generally, rarely, at the end of a case when it's successfully solved, credit the sensitive. Beverly, hold on. We'll get right back to you. Bottom of the hour coming up real quick. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. PSI ability. Being a sensitive. You all have it to one degree or another. Do you want more?
West of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. Beverly Jaggers is here. She's a sensitive, and she is the real McCoy. And I wanted to take the first part of the program tonight to give you some idea of how much of the real McCoy she really is. And now I've got some questions for her that relate, I guess, to the periphery of what she does, but very, very important questions to me, and I know as well to many of you. So, she doesn't know what's coming, by the way. She has no idea. We'll get to that in a moment. Once again, Beverly Jaggers and... hi, Bev.
Hi.
All right. I've got a whole bunch of questions I want to ask you about. Since with the ability... the abilities that every human has, if they nurture them and learn, you can look in through time. Then the obvious question is whether you can use this ability to prevent something that would occur that would be negative. Or are we all sort of marionettes dancing to somebody's string, and what's going to happen is going to happen. In other words... let's see how to put this. If you, you saw the shuttle disaster. Apply that to something else. If you saw somebody you knew getting into a horrible automobile accident, could you intervene and stop that? In other words, is time and the events in time are is it all malleable? Is it all changeable?
We are. Creatures of total free will. Ask Fred Kolb, the NASA engineer who tried to get the O-rings fixed before that happened. No, I believe that many times we were given a warning so that we can do something about it. There are certain things we can't do anything about. But
what's the difference? I mean, why are there some things that, I'm asking you, I understand, about the nature of time. Why are there some things that are inevitable you can't do anything about and other things that you can? Why?
This is one of the questions that we don't completely and fully understand. I will tell you a very short one about my own family. We had six kids, I told you, and one day I saw our youngest child being hit by a car, and then you're left with a question, should we talk to the child? Should we tell him what should be done? Well, what can you tell a six-year-old child other than look both ways? What we ended up with doing was to asking God that this not happen as seen. And that's all that could be done.
And what happened?
When it did occur.
It did occur.
It was my mother that was the person who, she was driving past the kindergarten when the kids were getting out of school, and my youngest saw the car, and of course it's grandma into the street. And my mother said to the day she died that she doesn't know how the oncoming car missed that child. I can only credit the fact that we asked that it not be as seen.
Not be as seen. But still, I'm hearing a click on the phone somehow.
Really?
Yeah, something's clicking. I don't know what it is. So
probably my phone screen.
So anyway.
I'm so old, you know.
The ageless. Really. So anyway, then the answer to that is we really don't know about the nature of time, not completely. We know something about it, but not...
No, in many of my books I've tried to address that subject, not that I know any more than anyone else does. Lynn Buchanan and some of us have an ongoing discussion about that. I guess we're going to wring all the juice out of it someday and know what the truth is, but some of our quantum people are coming in with some answers that may very well apply. He has some knowledge of what they're talking about, which is hard enough to start with, but it does. I would say the closest was Einstein, who said that time wasn't a railroad track from there to into the future,
mm-hmm.
and that past, present, and future were all one. And I think he came closer to that than anyone else.
So there could, I suppose, the track could take some detours, but in the end, it still ends up in San Francisco or wherever it terminates, right?
There's an old story. What is it? Appointment in Gomorrah, or appointment in Samaria, or something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the Bible is rife with such. And how did Jonah get in the whale? He was trying to escape something he was told he had to do. Not a Bible freak at all. I'm a Methodist, but we have a strong belief that man does have free will, but that there is a guiding force, and it's God. And some people are going to be upset. Some people are not going to like to hear that. Other people are going to say, yay, yay. But that's what most of us believe.
All right. Tomorrow night, I'm going to do what I've done for years, every now and then. And I just devote a night. I don't have a guest. I just take calls. And all I do is take ghost stories from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, the lines boil, and the stories are really serious, and they're really scary as a result of that, and so it makes, obviously, for great programming, but, Beverly, I've wanted to know about, it obviously goes to whether we have a life or a continued existence of some form of consciousness after we physically die, and these ghost stories would seem to say that, oh, you bet, we don't just end when we physically expire, that there is something else out there. And that's why I view these stories as very important. And I wonder, from what you've seen as a sensitive, whether you have any comment on that.
Oh, plenty. Do we have enough time? Remind me, I want to tell you a story about a skeptical science guy after this. We spent about 15 years as resource consultants for media, UFOs, mutilated cattle,
right.
ghosts, haunted houses, whatever. We
right.
ended up doing about 15 years of looking at this phenomena. We had seen things that could not be explained any other way. In fact, a couple of times we were able to photograph something of what we could see. And I will cheerfully say right now, no. Life goes on in some form. Consciousness.
It surely seems to.
Yeah.
It surely seems to. And when you remote view,
yeah.
are you closer to the realm of the other side?
No.
No?
No. We stop at the moment of death. No. What is the other side?
I have no idea, Beverly.
We don't either.
You don't either. So, in other words, you don't sit and talk to the dead.
Oh, golly, no.
Uh-huh.
No, no, no. That's not part of... No, we're not asked to do that. We don't want to do that. Just because someone has died doesn't mean they have become omniscient. We work a lot with scientists. We work a lot with crime. We work with Wall Street. We work with archaeology. We work
right.
with things like that can be proven. You know, the only 10%, they say we use 10% of our mind. Well, we're working with the other 10%.
The other 10%. And nevertheless, you are aware that there is something that follows this physical existence. In other words, we are more than just our physical...
This is going to sound strange to you, but the first time I ever saw a ghost, I had no idea it was a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend that I was associated with in Cubs County. And we were both their mothers, and I was down at her house quite frequently. We were coordinating programs for the scout. And whenever I was in her kitchen, there was always this gorgeous collie lying in the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And one day when I was down there, I mentioned to her that that was pretty one of the prettiest collies I'd ever seen. And she stopped cold and looked at me, and she said, "What collie?" And I said, "That one there." And she said, "What do you see?" And I told her. Sable and white, beautiful thing. And she said, that dog died 10 years ago.
Really?
She hadn't seen it herself. She couldn't see it. But it looked like a real dog to me.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, Bev. I will have a full night tomorrow night of stories like just like that from millions of people if they could get through, as many as can get through.
Yes.
And you just can't listen to hours and hours of these credible people telling these credible stories without believing there must be, there has to be something.
There is. We used to do, in fact, up until 2 years ago, we did a show with CBS every year where we'd go on location to a haunted house. And we'd take calls, and we'd also do an investigation there. A lot of it was for fun, of course, but during those shows, some pretty funny things occurred.
I can imagine, actually. I interviewed a poor fellow the other day in West Virginia. Did you hear that?
West Virginia. No. To be honest, I was teaching that night. I came in at 1:30 when he was gone.
I see. Hell of a case. He cut timber on Native American land.
Mm.
Cherokee, I believe. And he's been haunted ever since. He's lost everybody in his family, his mother... took off, his fiancée took off. He gets gouged in the eyes, things move. He's tortured, actually. And that is still the case right now. But all of these things, they're important to investigate from my point of view and wanting to know about, you know, what comes next. It's man's biggest question. His biggest fear is death, and his biggest question is whether it's really all over.
Right.
And so these things go to that. But again, in remote viewing, in this discipline as a sensitive, you don't necessarily move to that realm.
Not at all. Naturally, we're just as interested in it as you would be or anyone else.
But remote viewing wouldn't give you any special insight into it.
Well, I suppose if you wanted to use it that way, but there's so many interesting things to do here that I don't guess we'll ever run out of. Something new to or something that we love.
Have you ever considered remote viewing your own death?
Well, there's a way that you can do that. You just look ahead 1 year at a time, and when you don't see yourself, you're not there. So, what is that? You know, with...
Well, I guess that, yeah, that says you're not there.
With that and the quarter, you can get a cup of coffee, but nevertheless, that really isn't part of what we're doing. I'm very much a theorist, but not in that particular area.
Mm-hmm.
That's one reason I write books and try to keep people's thoughts focused on what they have that they're not using.
Would you say that a person who is going to begin to learn to do what you do needs to be a stable, emotionally stable person?
The more stable, the better. Yes, sir. Also, the higher the intelligence, the better, because what we do involves logic and analysis. There's nothing you have to take on faith. You don't have to believe this. Now I'll tell you the story about the psychic.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we were at the CRV conference last March, and there was a gentleman there who was a reporter editor for Popular Science magazine.
Right.
He was extremely skeptical, but he was there to cover it for his magazine. Well, one evening, I believe it was Saturday evening after the banquet, he accompanied me to sit in front of the roaring fire in the lodge, and he was telling me that he wasn't sure what he believed about any of this.
Sure.
So I happened to have my briefcase with me, and I opened it up, and I took out a Ziploc bag full of mud. And I handed it to the man, and he said, "Wait a minute, what's this?" And I said, "I want you to tell me about that." And he said, "But I'm here to study people like you. I have permission, by the way, to tell this story." So I insisted that he take the bag, hold it in his left hand, and tell me about it.
Right.
Finally, he began by saying, "East of the Mississippi," and he continued to tell me very evidential details about an ancient civilization, aboriginal-type people, building and living in a very, very prehistoric type of civilization. Now, every time he said something, I told him correct. Finally, I think his eyes were as big as teacups. And he asked me where the sample had come from, and I told him that it comes from Cahokia Mounds, Illinois, which is one of the largest prehistoric areas in this country.
I've heard that, yes.
It contains the largest pyramid in this side of the world.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yes. And he had described the pyramid, the people, and the way they lived. Now, there's no way this man could have known what was in my case, because I had samples from all over the country. Not only that, he was a skeptical reporter. And he turned in a job like that. So, you see, it doesn't matter if you're skeptical.
What kind of story did he end up writing?
He's writing it now.
Oh, he's writing it now? Oh, this is very recent then.
Yes. This was last March.
Last March.
He's afraid his head will be lopped off, I think.
Well, he might have good reason to fear.
Well, it happened nevertheless. And one of Lynn Buchanan's young remote viewers watching this said, "Do you have anything else in there that doesn't come from there?" So I handed him a rock, and he continued just the same way, writing down all of his impressions, which all turned out to be good, involving the Revolutionary War,
mm-hmm.
and a very sylvan place with trees and water. And when he got all finished, we told him where the rock had come from, which was Walden Pond, where Thoreau had written his book. Now, it turned out that I didn't know near as much about Walden Pond as the reporter did. And it is a Revolutionary War battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So here we have the skeptic sitting next to a trained remote viewer, not trained by me. And they turn in a job like that. And this is the joy of the kind of teaching that I do.
Beverly, what does CRV stand for?
Controlled Remote Viewing.
Controlled Remote Viewing.
It used to be coordinate, but that got dropped. They assumed that somehow someone with the world's greatest eidetic memory could have memorized every coordinate on the face of the globe so that they could conceivably cheat.
Huh.
Which, of course, is ridiculous. However, because of that, they quit using coordinate numbers in that way.
Huh. I guess I'm not going to ask you to name who you consider to be the real heavyweights in this field.
Why not?
Okay. Name who you consider to be the real heavyweights in this field.
Well, of those I know, and I don't know them all, I would say Lynn and Paul and Joe McMonagle are about pretty heavy guys.
Yep.
800-pound gorillas.
All right. They certainly are.
And they're going to love that, I know. These are serious people doing serious work, which is what we're doing. But, you see, first on, they didn't know where I was coming from. And because what I learned was older. It came from the original Soviet source.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of worked for the same clients at a time. They weren't really sure who I was or where I was getting on the train, so to speak.
I understand fully. They'd be suspicious even. Beverly, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. When we come back, we will open the lines and allow you to ask questions if you wish. I'm Art Bell.
I can see her lying back in her satin dress in a room where you do what you don't confess.
Take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
And the real McCoy. Beverly Jaggers is here. She is an intuitive, a sensitive, or if you must, I suppose, a psychic, but she doesn't like that. Those are just words, and they describe an ability that she says everybody has, and that includes you.
All the good laws, when we're
So what we're going to do is open the phone lines here in a moment and let you ask her whatever you want. One exception. We are not doing readings. In other words, this is not the psychic hotline you're tuned into tonight. So no individual reading, but any questions you have of the nature that I've been asking or about doing this or doing what she does, whether it's you doing it or others doing it, that kind of question, all of those are absolutely welcome. Yeah, like that spot. All right, we're going back now to Beverly Jaggers. In a moment, we're going to open the lines for you to ask her questions coming right up. That is, if you're up for it, Beverly.
Well, you ask wonderful questions, Art.
Yeah.
But I'll be happy to answer those from the audience as well.
All right. Well, then I've got one more for you here. This comes from Vancouver, British Columbia. It says, hello, Beverly. I'm listening to you on Art Bell right now in Vancouver, B.C., and I'm wondering if you've heard that 27 Eastside Vancouver women, all prostitutes, all addicted to drugs, have disappeared without a trace. Occurred between 1995 and January of 1999. There have been no clues. Since January of 99, none have disappeared. But a friend of his, and he names her, I won't give the name on the air, is among the missing. Had you heard of this?
No, sir. There's quite a few cases like that. We had the I-70 killer in our area. Unfortunately, there are just too many of those about, but no, we haven't. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right, but that would be the kind of thing that you'd be consulted about.
Normally, yes. More the single homicide more frequently than your serial killer.
Sure. Yeah.
We worked on Bundy, and we worked on...
Oh, you did?
Yeah, Mr. Bowman, the one that I told you about earlier.
Right.
And the Atlanta thing. And now and then we get something like that, unfortunately. But we haven't heard anything about that one, or no one has. We have to be asked. We don't volunteer.
I understand.
And we can't take cases from the public.
All right. Beverly, I know you have written books, and I want to give you a chance to plug them. You haven't plugged a thing, so I'm going to make you plug them. What have you written?
Oh, golly, I've written 22.
You have?
Yes, over the years. The next one coming out is, you're going to faint. It's called The Right Stuff, and it's based on our lives as antique dealers. It's about antique fountain pens, ink wells, and things like that. That'll be out in June.
You're kidding?
No, sir. I told you I worked right for a living.
All right. What have you written that you would recommend to my listeners as the best book on the kind of topic we're talking about tonight?
Well, The Psychic Paradigm is a primer. It's a good place to start. It's a good place to start looking at that other 10%.
All right.
The Psychometry, The Science of Touch. This goes into hard targets. We like hard targets. That's something to hold on to. The socks from the dead girl, the rock, the baggie full of mud from Cahokia Mounds, dinosaur bones when that's what's wanted, sample from a dig someplace in the world when they want to know something about archaeology. Those are what we call hard targets.
All right. Let me ask you about a hard target. Dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
What killed them?
That's something we're working on. It looks like a cataclysmic event. Everything went black.
Are you able to look at large, apparently so, large events, either in the past or in the future,
yes,
that affect, send out a giant ripple in time? I mean, they literally affect everything. Some sort of, for example, climate change, horrible storms, things that would really stand out in the timeline?
You're talking about your book.
past or present?
If directed to do so, if there's a question, yes.
Future. Mm-hmm.
There has to be some spark there to initiate the question. And, I mean, we don't just go casting about wildly for things to look at.
I see.
When we heard that, when Harold Sherman let us know that he had done a Mars scan before the Mars lander went off, we repeated it here and coordinated. We were working on the same project in two different places because he was in Arkansas. And we did our own scan, and they were so similar, you'd almost think the same person had written them.
Well, a lot of people would sure like to know what's happening to our Mars probes and to the Russians' Mars probes. There's something about Mars. They're just not friendly to probes.
Amazingly so, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. They just blow up. They go tumbling when they ought not. They crash into the atmosphere. They do everything but go where they're supposed to go.
They land with one foot on a rock. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Seemingly, yes. But we can't just say, hey, well, today we're going to find the Mars Explorer. Somebody has to have a reason, or someone has to ask.
No, that certainly makes sense. All right, let's go to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Beverly Jaggers. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, good. Go ahead. Where are you?
I'm in Sacramento, California.
Sacramento, all right.
Yeah. Why I'm calling is I'm interested in knowing how to do this, and for the reasons that I'm a college student, I'm a biochemistry major, and I'm interested in biological functions. And so how do you see that there could be a relationship that would help with my studies? I mean, would it give me, you know, some sort of insight on, you know, where to search, you know, and maybe how to detect, you know, viruses and diseases? And would it be beneficial for me to sort of use it as sort of something in my studies?
As an adjunct, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Some in the group are more or less medical intuitives, if you want to use a term like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I, to be honest with you, my dear, I cannot think of a single profession that wouldn't be bettered by learning this.
Really? I find everything so interesting. Like, I chose biochemistry because I like physics and math and biological functions and everything. So I'm really interested in knowing about everything. And it seems like this really gives you an opportunity to touch on things that you can't, you know, always get from the book.
Yeah, let's face it. If it would give you, in your career, a really serious edge, it might not be something that you would talk about with your colleagues or those who are presently teaching you. You wouldn't talk about it, but you would sure as heck use it.
Yeah. How would I go about, you know, learning how to do this? How would I, you know, tap into that source?
All right.
I don't know how.
It's a good basic question. In other words, if she wanted to learn, Beverly, start to learn, where does a person begin? How?
Well, if she's on computer, she should go to my website and order the basic course. If she's not on computer, she's going to have to get it snail.
All right. What's the basic course?
It's 114 pages of how I did this and how I teach other people to do it. And it comes with all the material that she would need. And some of them may seem not to be associated with what she's doing, but it's like this. When you learn how to tell one color from another by feel,
sure,
you're making a little pathway into your head.
Sure.
And every new skill that you try is another pathway, and eventually you've got a highway.
And it's always going to have an eventual application of what you want to use it for.
Oh, yes.
Because it's virtually, you could virtually use it for anything.
You could indeed. I was called late one night by a squad member whose wife was writhing on the floor. She had terrible pain. He had no idea what was wrong with her. And I described what I saw. I didn't know what it was. I'm not an anatomy specialist.
Right.
I said it was gray and it was strange looking, and I told him where it was. Well, it turned out that that was her gallbladder, but I've never seen a gallbladder.
Gotcha.
So they had to take it out, obviously.
Gotcha. So then the wider experience of an intuitive is a valuable thing to an intuitive. In other words, a formal education in all kinds of different areas about anatomy and a little bit of everything would be helpful in the wide field of work that you do.
Well, you remember when I said the more intelligent and well-read the person was, the better.
You said that, yes.
Yeah, that's true. If you have a good general education, it's certainly going to be useful. You don't have to be a geographer or a nuclear scientist, but it could be that what we're doing might come into an area like that. One of our newer members, police officer, is a bomb and arson specialist. Well, this is a skill we didn't have in the squad, you see. He knows if we smell a certain smell, he would be able to tell us what that is. It's an accelerant of some kind.
Boy, I wonder if that's the kind of skill that a bomb expert would want to have. You know, I can only relate to the movies, you know, where finally they're down to cutting the red wire or the blue wire.
Yeah.
You see the dykes hovering over the red wire, you know, and he's
going to
cut it. And then at the last second he goes for the blue wire and the bomb doesn't go off. Well,
not very likely in real life.
The other half of the time it's going to go off, right?
Yes, more likely.
So if you applied these talents that we're talking about right now to that,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't. Well, maybe it would be good. In other words, you'd know which line to cut, wouldn't you?
Yeah, hopefully you would. This is a learned skill. Now, let's say intuition seems to be a doorway. In other words, almost everybody has an intuition, but it's not trained. It's not capable of control.
Actually, it's the other way around. Mostly, in the real world, we have these feelings, these intuitions, but we ignore them. usually at some great cost, I might add.
Yes.
Well, Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Beverly Jaggers. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Hello, Art and Beverly. Thanks.
Hi.
Thanks for doing this. I was listening to you earlier tonight. You were talking about the truck drivers and the fuel prices and all that. I'm one of those guys who's barely making it. I just wondered if you had any more insight or if Beverly has any insight into what she thinks the government's going to do about that. I've got three trucks, and one of them is parked right now, and the other two are on the way to being parked because, I can't make it, and drivers that are driving for me can't make it. You know, it's
all right,
pretty scary, looking at an overall implication in the whole economy. And
I agree with you.
Kind of ties in with the cataclysmic effect,
I couldn't agree more, sir.
Y2K.
I agree. Thank you. He's a truck driver right now. They're demonstrating in Washington and everywhere else, lining their trucks up. Our nation's economy is dependent on trucking. Flat statement. That's all there is to it. And the price right now of oil is actually putting the trucks out of service.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty serious thing. Is that something that if somebody commissioned you to look at, you could look at?
Well, we've done a little looking at that anyway because of the stock market stuff that we like to mess around with.
Uh-huh.
I think this gentleman will find that by June there'll be, let's say, sunshine coming through the clouds.
By June?
Yeah, that's maybe not going to be what he wants to hear, but I'm not omniscient, but that's what the feeling that we have is. We all have to fill tanks, too.
Okay, when you say sunshine through the clouds, by that do you mean that the government will take some action or that the prices will simply of their own accord fall?
I think a little of both, yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Fair answer. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Beverly Jaggers. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, I was wanting to know, earlier she said something about they looked at calculations, UFOs, and crop circles.
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, originally I was going to ask about that, but I figured that it couldn't be from man because they've been seeing it since the beginning of time.
Where are you now, by the way?
Oh, I'm calling from Decatur, Illinois.
Decatur, Illinois. All right.
Mm-hmm. Really, the question I wanted to ask is, has she ever looked at the beginning of the universe? Because they always talk about the Big Bang. And has she ever looked at the subatomic structure of matter or the time-space fabric? Because Miki Okaku and people like them working on matrix theory, they don't have a clue of how to proceed.
All right. Well, boy, that's a lot of questions. A lot of questions. Let's move up to the first thing you asked about: UFOs, crop circles, all these enigmas that are out there must be fascinating targets for somebody like yourself.
We were asked to look into the UFO flap at Piedmont, Missouri, and we saw the vehicle or whatever you would like to term it. And bounced some energy off it to see whether there would be an intelligence inside. And nothing bounced.
Nothing bounced.
If it was indeed a craft, whatever was making it go, let's bring it down to its common denominator, wasn't intelligent.
Now, isn't that interesting?
Then when they brought out Star Wars and we saw probes, then we began to wonder.
You saw probes?
In Star Wars. A non-intelligent vehicle. It was just sent somewhere to scan or whatever job happened to be.
So it was robotic in nature?
Well, apparently. Because if you bounce energy like that, if something there is intelligent, you feel that. Or you should. And there was nothing like that. And there were several there who were trained highly enough that it should have registered as some kind of a bounce.
You mentioned God earlier, addressing the latter part of his question. One of the greatest mysteries, of course, in all of time and for all of man is this Big Bang thing. Not so much the Big Bang, but what came just before it.
Mm-hmm.
And would that be a tempting target?
To be brutally frank, we've never given it a consideration as a target.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure any remote viewer has ever taken that as a target.
The instant of creation, Beverly.
Let me ask the guys when we get to the conference and see if they want to use that as a target.
Okay, well, tell them that a lot of us out here would be really, really interested in, that particular target, all right?
Including all of us, I'm sure.
Well, I hope so. I mean, the instant of creation, call it the Big Bang, call it whatever you want, and whether it was, in fact, a creation. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Beverly Jaggers. Hi.
Hi, R.
Hello.
Hi, Beverly.
Hello.
Oh, I have a question that maybe you won't want to hear, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How do you turn it off?
Control.
You mean once you've become sensitive or are sensitive, how do you get rid of it?
I call it intuition, and I want to get rid of it.
All right, good. Hold the line. Stay right where you are. That actually is a really, really good question, and we'll ask it when we get back.
Every night I hope and pray a dream lover will come my way.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
And my guest is Beverly Jaggers of the United States PSI squad in St. Louis. We'll ask her if we can give out an address here. There's certainly a website, and we are linked to it. It's on my website now if you want to go up there and take a look-see and read more about all of this. You can do that. Otherwise, we'll try and get you an email address or a snail mail address or something or another coming up in just a moment. Stay right there. All right, here we go again. I don't think you get this question all that frequently, Beverly. Most people I've talked to consider this to be a blessing. But here's a young lady asking, how do you get rid of it? And if I may, young lady, how did you acquire it?
Basically, I've had it most of my life. I'm 60. Thank you for that, Art.
All right.
I'm Kathy in Phoenix, formerly from Alton, Illinois, and have stood on top of the main Cahokia Mound. Wonderful place.
Mm-hmm.
But it's done nothing but be harmful to me, really.
In what way?
Well, I've told people things that were going to happen, and unfortunately, I don't see very many good things. And when I tell them and it does happen...
So you're like the evening news. You don't report the good
stuff. Yeah, bad.
Well, I think maybe bad sticks out. So you've told people that things are going to happen, and then what?
They happen, and I've lost a few friends and acquaintances that never talked to me again.
Okay. Beverly?
No, we get that question all the time, obviously.
Oh, really?
Obviously, yeah.
Obviously, huh? All right.
It's so common. But everybody who's going through this doesn't realize that he or she has cousins everywhere. They don't realize, number one, that they have any control over this and that it can be shut off if it's not wanted.
How?
Well, who owns your mind? You do. You have to realize that it can be shut off. You've heard of sports figures who have thought themselves into greater and
yes.
greater expert
yes.
things.
Yes.
Well, it can be used the same way.
Same way. You know, I kind of joined with a caller in this because I have had one inescapable precognitive event in my life. I've had, you know, two or three now events that fall into this category, and I was never in control of any of them, Beverly. They just happened, and they happened against my will. I didn't think about it. I wasn't thinking about it. I wasn't considering it. Boom, it just happened. And so I don't know how you would turn something like that off.
You have to take control of it, and you have to tell yourself that you need to shut that off. Now, if you're talking about your Eiffel Tower thing...
Nope.
That's different.
No, I'm not, actually. I'm not. I had one absolute precognitive event in my life. I knew someone was going to hit my car. You know, it kept washing over me like ocean waves washing over me. Somebody was going to smack my car, and... Long story short, I went to the window twice. Second time I went to the window, I watched a guy go down the walkway, get in his car, started up, put it in reverse, and smash into my car.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was good. I mean, I yelled out the window, hey, stop. I've got your license plate. So I'm stopping. But, you know, I knew. And it came washing over me in uncontrollable waves.
Had you known what was occurring, you would have known that that was one of the little warnings that we discussed earlier with my child in the car, and you would have gone out and moved the car.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I want to make sure. Look, people are listening tonight. They're going to think I've got a head bigger than the moon and that we are omniscient and we know every answer there ever was, and that is not the case. We are people with jobs, with children, with families, with paychecks, with bills, and these are not putting us in the category of Mathieu Kaku or anybody like that who really knows something. We have honed a skill that everybody has and are using it for what we consider extremely important things, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean that we're anything other than the person next to us on the bus.
Well, you know, I suppose you have a point. I mean, really, if I had known and been experienced with what came washing over me, you're right. I'd have gone out and moved my car, and it wouldn't have been hit. I never thought about that, actually.
Well, that's what happens to most people. And then they start, after they've had a couple like that, they start looking for it to happen. And then, of course, it does because they just opened the door. You understand that?
Yes. Vividly, I understand that, yes.
It's what we're... Well, I didn't exactly mean you. I was hoping she was still there. But when you open yourself to just any old thing that wants to come through, then you're going to be a victim.
Yeah, victim tattooed right across your forehead. First time calling a line, you're on the air with Beverly Jaggers. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I had a couple questions to ask you.
Sure. Where are you?
I'm in Washington State.
All right.
One of them is that I have my boyfriend is very interested in Russia. He spends a lot of time over there, and I'm wondering if I go to visit Russia with him, which is fairly likely in the pretty near future, if it's something that I should look into over there, if there's still sort of I don't know where or who you talk to over there, but sort of what if this is still something that is taught over there, or
right.
if I can find information. The other question that I had is, you mentioned briefly sort of maybe kind of honing in on these intuitions. And I guess my question is, I know that I've had a number of points in my life where I've had very strong intuitions about something, and oftentimes maybe about a person or about a situation that's extremely bad, and I tend to pay close attention to those things. And I never really know if I'm overreacting to a situation, or is that something that is like the beginning? Are intuitions the beginning to this, or are they not related at all?
Okay.
I don't think they're related at all, to be honest. I work with some people online who are intuitives, and we seem to be doing different things. Not that one is not as good as the other.
They're just different.
It's just different. It's like some people like Kool-Aid and some people like Hawaiian punch or lemonade or whatever. So it's in the same family in a way. But her original point was about going to Russia.
She asked about whether, in other words, would there be somebody she could see there? Would that be a good place to go for the kind of training? That's where you got yours.
No, not anymore. When the Iron Clash came, I think that more is being done in this country. I would advise her, if she can, to come to the CRB conference in May and start talking to some of us who are going to be there.
Some of the heavyweights certainly are going to be there. The Controlled Remote Viewing Conference in May?
May I give the website?
Of course you may.
Okay, it's rvconference.org. O-R-G.
Right.
And she will find all the information she needs there. It's very inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely inexpensive compared to some of the conventions that I've appeared at. The entry fee is minuscule. And I believe the accommodations are $39 a night.
Wow. That's very inexpensive.
I think it's miraculous.
Yeah. If people would like to contact you by email, is there a way they can do that? And do you have a P.O. box or something or another?
Yeah, it's on the website.
Yeah, but not everybody has a computer. See, I'm trying to...
No, I got you. Yes. They can contact me at U.S. PSI Squad, Department A, Post Office Box 29396, St. Louis, Missouri, 63126.
All right. We should always do that twice. Beverly Jaggers, that's, by the way, folks, J-A-E-G-E-R-S, United States PSI Squad. And it's P.O. Box 29396 in St. Louis, zip code 63126.
Yeah, we don't have a telephone service.
Probably just as well.
Yeah, actually, right.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Beverly Jaggers. Good morning. Now you are. Hello there.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
Where are you, sir? This is William from Portland calling.
Okay.
I believe Dr. Edgar Mitchell spoke that when he took some of his space missions, he performed some ESP experiments.
That's correct.
And he found that his sensitivities were greatly heightened. My question, Beverly, is do you think there's something natural or man-made that might be inhibiting our psychic abilities on Earth that we have to work through?
Daily life has pretty much been an inhibitor.
It sure is.
Not everyone has the time to give to develop these abilities like I did. I made the statement in the first hour that I was as psychic as a box of rocks when I started. I'm a person who's a seeker. I look for answers, as any journalist will tell you that we're born that way. We have to ask questions. And I had too many questions about what the Russians were doing. And then when I got a hold of some of the material, it became an endless fascination, and I didn't think it was for me. But at some point, I decided, golly, if Russians can learn it, why couldn't Americans? What's different?
Mm-hmm.
We're all human. And so, therefore, if they could teach them, then I could teach me. And it slowly began to take form. But the thing is that it takes a certain dedication to really give the time to it. I think every squad member will tell you that he didn't just fall into this. Someone mentioned ESP, and they say, oh, golly, that stuff is dial the 900 number. But when they find out that there's really something there, or something that can be learned, now that puts it in a whole different category.
Well, beyond the directions of our lives, do you think maybe the electromagnetic influences or the sun could have some influence in this?
Yeah, he raises a good point. Edgar Mitchell did do that on the way to the moon.
Yes.
And so the question was, is there anything about the fact that we are earthbound with gravity, with conditions here on Earth, that inhibit it or that might be enhanced by leaving it?
Apparently not. Actually, Mitchell was working with three receivers here on Earth, and one of them, of course, let it out to the media and blew everything. But what was odd about that was that he was sending at other times than he had originally planned to send mentally. He was using a deck of Zener cards, which we consider not too good, and I could tell you why later if you want to. But he was sending at what Earth receivers would think was, say, 1 p.m. here. And indeed, because of the demands of being an astronaut, he couldn't take free time at that time, so he had to adjust that.
Right.
However, the receivers here were able to receive anyway. So they were making a time jump without even realizing it.
Oh, now, isn't that interesting? So, in other words, it was not telepathy as conventionally defined, but rather remote viewing, and it wouldn't make any difference when he sent the message. It would be received anyway.
You have put your finger on the truth. Yes.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Beverly Jaggers. Hi.
Hi.
Hello, where are you?
A Chicago suburb.
Chicago, all right.
Uh-huh. Beverly?
Yes.
Oh, with your expertise and sensitivity, do you know who might win this presidential election?
Oh. Uh-huh.
We just got finished with the Super Bowl. Don't tell me a gorilla.
Again, please?
So you have not looked at the presidential election?
No. We had enough trouble with the Super Bowl.
What about the primary? Primaries going now with Bush and McCain?
Politically, no one has asked us, and it hasn't come up.
So it's something you just haven't looked at? Yes.
No. There is no possible way that we could look at everything. Later on this year, perhaps it will come up as a question. But as I said, we're not omniscient. We're not omnipotent.
I know. People have a habit of asking exactly the kinds of questions that that you just got. They can't resist. I understand. Even I fall into that trap. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Beverly Jaggers. Hi.
Hello. My name is Donald. I'm from Anacortes.
Yes.
Anacortes, Washington.
Right.
I got a weird question for you, and you sort of hinted to it, Mr. Bell. It was that after, let me say, 2000, 2001, all these superstorms you're getting and stuff like that, are we going to get through this?
I guess we could put it another way. How bad will the environmental degradation get? How bad will the climate change
what I'm trying to ask, sir.
All right. Beverly, any?
What we've seen is that it's not going to be near as bad as some people are afraid of. When we were asked about what was Y2K, said at the time, I didn't see anything Armageddon-y at all. I think it's very intelligent to put away a certain amount of supplies. In fact, I believe the Mormon Church specifies this, don't they?
Oh, yes.
But that's only common sense. But another thing that bothered is that all of the TV channels seem to be running back-to-back specials on death, doom, and disaster. And this creates a mindset where if you have this bend in your head all the time, consistently,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be looking behind yourself every minute to see something creeping up on you.
Yeah.
And we think it creates a very unhealthy state of mind.
Do you think, I mean, early in the program, we started the program by talking about killing a frog, stopping a frog's heart.
Yes.
That's remote influencing.
Yes.
Is it possible that many minds concentrating on some negative occurrence could actually precipitate its reality?
It's possible. I wouldn't say it's probable. But this is what happens when a whole church full of people prays for one person who is ill.
Yes.
Healing is one of the most visible means of this kind of thing.
I had a very interesting interview with a man last week, you may have heard, on just that subject.
Right.
And what he did say, believe me, was that they had had control groups of Christians and Buddhists and other religions praying for patients with 100% and better outcomes, improvements in outcomes for those who were prayed for, but no delineation between whether it was a Christian or a Buddhist or anything else.
No, I don't think there is. If there is a creator, he does not wear a certain church on his arm.
All right. Well, listen, Beverly, it has been some kind of joy having you on the air this morning. Again, if you would please give out your website address.
Okay, it's www.usipsisquad.com.
That's USPSI squad, right?
.com.
.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they can email you there. They can also peruse the books you've written. I think we've got links for those. Are most of your books or any available on Amazon and so forth?
I think five or six of them. Maybe a few more. Barnes & Noble, most bookstores.
Wow.
Carry them. And a couple of them are very hard to get right now because they don't have any. But they will come back, hopefully. And they have the address. I gave you this mail.
Yes.
And one of those is called Ghost Hunting Professional Haunted House Investigation. And, Art, if you want to do a show sometime on that subject, I think we have some really unusual stories to tell.
Yes, I do. Oh, you bet I do. Beverly, thank you. And good night.
Thank you.
Good night. Do I want to do a show on that subject? We're going to do one tomorrow night. Ghost to ghost. Tomorrow night. Just the two of us. Or so.
Good morning, Mr. Sunshine. You brighten up my day. Come sit beside me in your way.
Take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Way down the street there's a light in his place. He opens the door, he's got that look on his face. And he asks you where you've been. You tell him you've seen and you talk
about such a pretty song. Good morning, everybody. We're headed back into open lines toward the end of the program here. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. Anything brought up in the first hour or successive hours with a very good guest, Beverly Jaggers. It's all fair game, and it's what Open Lines is all about. Next. All right, Open Lines, and anything you would like to talk about certainly is fair game, including the results of the political race yesterday, which I thought was amazing and a very happy event for me, John McCain winning both Michigan and Arizona. So, anything from that to a millionaire? You've been watching. How many of the rest of you are junkies for that? I certainly am. It's going to be four nights of it this week. Who wants to be a millionaire? And I like Regis, and I like the show, and I'm stuck on it, and I admit it. And I think that I'm part of a very large group in this country right now. You know what I'm collecting, though? I'm collecting the goofs that they make. Like 21 had a big mistake the other day. Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire has had a couple. And I've been collecting them. They're being very, very ultra careful, as you might imagine, to avoid any hint of impropriety because of what happened the last time. America did go, believe me, I was there. The $64,000 question, I remember. Then they did a movie on it called Quiz Show, about the quiz shows. It was a mania. And you're experiencing it again. Maybe all that is old is new. But America is now experiencing this whole mania again. And it's kind of interesting. This time they're going to try and be really careful. But despite all that, things still happen. These quiz shows, it's really something to watch. And I'm not sure what the attraction is. Most television leaves me cold. Most of the whipped-up-for-TV comedies and the whipped-up dramas, they mostly leave me cold. I don't watch. But somehow, I did watch Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and I got hooked on that and 21. And I got so manic about it that I even began to watch Winning Lines for a while. And I thought, man, that's one tough show. And, of course, it's going off, and I think I can see why watching it. But I still watched it. What is the mania associated with quiz shows? It's really interesting. Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Eric. This is Andy from Argo, Florida.
Yes, hi, Andy.
Good to talk to you. I ran across something that I think you might get a kick out of. I get the MUFON subscription,
right?
The local here in Tampa, and they have little cartoons with jokes in them sometimes. Well, there's this one little cartoon, and I should fax it to you, but it shows this real fat lady in her bathrobe heading into her living room, and she stops, and she's holding her cup of coffee, and the caption says, "Oh, my God, they're back." And then it says at the bottom, "The return of the carpet circles." And in her living room is this crop circle, but it's in her carpet.
Don't laugh. I had a lady, funny as that is, it is funny. I had a lady call me who really did have carpet circles.
Serious business.
Well, potentially, yes. I mean, if we get crop circles and we get mud circles and snow circles, then why not rug circles?
True. One last thing. Any update on that, getting the audio or the video of that the farmer in Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, wherever it is?
West Virginia?
West Virginia, yes.
No, the minute I get it, you know what I'll do. I'll make stills, I'll make AVI files, whatever it takes, and I'll get it on.
Great.
All right.
Well, listen, thanks, and nice talking to you, Art.
All right, thank you, and take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Art.
Hi,
my name is John, calling from Westchester County, New York, listening to WPHT Philadelphia.
All right, John.
Interesting nuclear accident we had here in Westchester County last week.
I know. Also with the standard after disclaimer. In other words, yes, there was a release of some radioactive material or gas emission, but there is no danger, and all radiation counts close to the reactor are normal.
Well, that's what the national news media has been reporting.
I know.
Given its proximity to New York City, this nuclear power facility is only about 40 miles from Midtown Manhattan.
Right.
According to a county spokesperson, this was the first level 2 alert they've had in the 26-year history of this facility. Now, that's two steps below China syndrome. A couple of interesting things came out in the local media. According to published reports, the National Nuclear Regulatory Commission knew about potential problems with these pipes in September of 1999, but did nothing to shut down the plant. And also, and this, you'll love this, the day before this accident took place, The president of the New York Power Authority held a major news conference announcing a tentative sale of the Indian Point 2 facility.
Oh, really?
It's amazing, the coincidence of the timing of this. And this was a horrible spill. Highly radioactive water spilling at a rate of 91 to 93 gallons per minute into the containment building. Unbelievable tragedy. Governor of New York calling for a major investigation, particularly considering the fact that there was a tentative $800 million sale.
Yeah, how close to it are you?
I'm about 20 miles south of it.
20 miles.
But the thing you have to remember is that the Clintons' new home is probably maybe 10 miles east.
10 miles east?
Right, Pound Ridge. Well, I'd say in terms of east, northeast, they're about 10 to 15 miles away from it. They're inland from the Hudson River where this nuclear plant is located.
I was very close to Three Mile Island when it occurred, and I remember the BS they put out in the media to us even locally in the beginning. I mean, what a bunch of BS. So
now, the mayor of the local city wasn't informed until 3 hours, and no one knew about this until about 12 hours later.
Typical, yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Art.
Right, thank you, sir, and take care. Now, typical, I guess there are certain procedures that have to be followed, certain notifications that have to be made. But, you know, that kind of jargon isn't very much comfort to somebody who's close to a serious problem. And they do, they have had some serious problems. And, of course, they're still dealing with Chernobyl. And the sarcophagus they built over that thing is cracking and deteriorating. And I don't know, we've done some interesting things on this planet, haven't we? East of the Rockies, you're on here. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Hey, I got two things I want to say.
Sure.
One, I used to work at a nuclear power plant in Illinois for about 9 months.
Right.
And, I'm not saying that they did everything right, but the spill was in the containment building, and that's what it's designed for.
Oh, absolutely true.
To contain everything.
Yeah.
So, really, I don't think the public was in any danger.
Yeah, in other words, so far, so good.
Yeah. The thing I want to call about, it was a while ago. I was going back through your archives, and you did a program, I don't remember the date, about a strange weather phenomenon happening in close proximity to military bases.
Yes.
And you were saying it was some, you thought it was some kind of shield for ballistic missiles or something.
No. What? Let me take you back to it, all right? It involved the NEXRAD radar.
Okay, yeah.
Actually. And it involved very strange, perfect circles observed in NEXRAD, with NEXRAD radar, in precipitation of one sort or another. In other words, the radar seemed to be seeing something in addition to or illuminated by or reflected by, I don't know the right way to put it,
okay.
Something that was going on in the atmosphere, yes.
Has there been any more developments with that? I was just kind of curious. I printed out a picture off the website, and I got out a road map, and I looked at it real close, and I did find that there's either a major city or a large military base right by or directly over those circles.
Well, let me put it to you this way. The people that talked about that didn't fare very well. Now, it could have been coincidental, but two or three people that talked about that topic, a couple died, and one had a heart attack, very serious heart attack. And I am not saying that there is a direct relationship, because I cannot prove that, but I can tell you that it seemed like more than just a coincidence. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, turn your radio off, please.
Oh, Art.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Hey, God, I've been trying to get a hold of you for a long time.
Well, here you are.
Anybody but Gore. I'd like to have my tax lowered. I think you should have Harry Brown back on, and I mean, he's got the best ideas. I know he doesn't have a chance to win, but he could sure use...
Well, have you listened to what McCain's been saying about the IRS and taxes?
Oh, yeah, and I know in a few years he probably would cut our taxes, but...
Well, no, he means it. I mean, he's talking about restructuring the whole damn tax thing, and that's exactly
what
it
is. And so is Harry. I just would like to see Harry get, a little bit of...
I'd love to have Harry on anytime.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
I really, really, really like Harry.
Hey,
but,
if you have
but,
a question...
But listen, I think you're right. What are the honest prospects for the possibilities that we have in front of us right now? You and I both know it's going to be Gore or Bradley, all right? And it's going to be Bush or McCain.
I realize that. Like I said, anybody but Gore. have you ever tried to get Mary Summer Rain on your show?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It seems like I had her scheduled or talked to her or something. I don't think I've ever had her on, but I've had information about her. But I wouldn't mind having her on.
Oh, she talks. Her books talk about just about every subject that you love.
All right. Well, if she's out there, she'll contact me, and I'd be glad to proceed. That's what I would say. It seemed to me like I talked to her once. I can't recall. It may have been a scheduling problem or some reason why we couldn't get her on, or she couldn't come on. I can't remember. First on caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Turn your radio off, please.
Yes, sir.
There you are. You're on the air.
Art Bell?
Yes.
You're kidding.
No, I wouldn't kid about something as serious as this.
Okay, my name is John. I'm calling from Clarinda, Iowa, the birthplace of Glenn Miller.
Yes, sir.
First of all, I had a suggestion for a guest.
All right.
Jimmy Buffett.
Jimmy Buffett?
Yeah, the guy that wrote Margaritaville.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he, I just got done reading his book, A Pirate Looks at 50. He's flown seaplanes all over the Caribbean, all over South America, and I just think he would be a very unique character to talk to.
He does sound interesting, actually.
Yeah, he's not your average run-of-the-mill musician.
Okay, I've had several on. I wouldn't mind at all. Anything else?
Yeah, the lady you had on earlier tonight.
Yes.
I was surprised nobody asked her one of the most obvious questions that was in the foremost of my mind.
And that
who killed JonBenet Ramsey?
Well, okay. Again, unless every time we have somebody on who is a remote viewer, and that's what Beverly is, a sensitive and intuitive, a remote viewer, if you must, a psychic, I don't know, just words. People call up and say, ask about this specific thing or that specific thing. These are projects that take, you know, a whole team to do, as I'm sure you've heard from other remote viewers. So it might have been a project that she took on, who knows, or perhaps because of your call she will, but we tried not to ask about specifics like that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Dan from Des Moines.
Hi, Dan.
I got a question about something that happened to me some time ago. Well, even too long ago, I guess.
Sure.
A couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine killed herself.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was a bad deal. But the night that she did that, I had seen her a couple of days prior to that. And, I mean, she was just a friend, honestly, just a friend.
Right.
Had cut my hair for 7 or 8 years, and we used to talk all the time.
Sure.
But anyway, the night that she did that, something really odd was going on with me. I had really a crazy day at work, and my wife and I went to the casino, had a couple of drinks, and I just, for some reason, just got bombed. I mean, just, and I really didn't drink that much. I just got really, really bombed.
Hmm.
And I remember going into the bathroom and looking at myself in the mirror, and something just really eerie came over me. I mean, just a really odd, crazy feeling. And then after that, I don't remember anything. Don't remember nothing. And my wife said, "Yeah, you were fine. You know, we gambled a little bit. You had a couple more drinks, and we went home."
Yes.
And then the next day, I found out that my friend killed herself. You ever heard of such a crazy thing like that? Or
I've heard a lot of things just
crazy.
Like,
you know, yeah.
Not crazy. No, I don't think crazy.
I don't. I guess the question that I have. Is there really some kind of an interconnection between people? I mean, really?
Yes, sir. I think there is. I'll tell you what you do. You listen tomorrow night. Tonight, actually. Is it real? Yes, it is. In other words, Are ghosts real? Yes, they are. They sure are. And if you'll listen tomorrow night, you'll, by the time it's over, you won't have any doubts. It's a really, really important topic, on top of being really scary to listen to, and some people like it just for that part alone. And it is scary. It's a proof, if you listen carefully, that we exist beyond the physical. And that's why I do those programs. I think that's why they're so popular. I don't know. It seems such a universal thing that people like you experience things like that, associated with death. That as so many times we get stories of people who have just passed giving signals. I know you can argue sometimes, or you can try, that, well, it's just the human mind grieving. But what did the man who was just on the line have to grieve about that night? Or is he just connecting an event and a weird feeling with something that occurred the next day, creating his own sort of coincidence? I don't know. But I definitely lean toward the side that what you're going to hear tomorrow night, and you've heard on other shows like it, is simply as real in its own way as the life that we lead consciously right now. Does that make sense? It does to me. A half hour break. We will be right back.
It's been a too long time with no peace of mind, and I'm ready for the chance to get better.
As the old saying goes, don't touch that dial.
Tell you I've been racking my brain, hoping to find a way out.
If you could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark, or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me, and I will never be set free, as long as I'm a ghost you can't see.
Call Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
You might tell your friends tonight, Ghost to Ghost AM, I call it. It's nothing but ghost stories all night long. All night long tonight. And it was by request. Somebody requested last week we do it. I thought, sure, why not? It's been a while. About time to do it again. It's a very interesting show to hear for a variety of reasons, and the chief, in my mind, being that if there is something that comes after this life, this is one of the definite areas of proof that is before us if we listen. And if you listen tonight, you will come away convinced that we are more than our physical selves, because the evidence is really quite strong. All right, final segment coming up. Here we go. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
I don't believe it.
Well, that's, you know, a lot of people say that.
Yeah, and you really do sound different on the phone than you do on the air.
Of course
I wanted to call to second the nomination for the Jimmy Buffett guy. If you could get Jimmy Buffett on, it would be incredible. This guy is a poet, a singer, a songwriter. He's been doing it for like a quarter century, and he flies all around the world in a World War II amphibious aircraft, and he's just an amazing guy. He's written 3 books, and if you were interested in Jimmy Buffett at all, and listen to some of his music.
And I am, and I have.
You have?
Yes, I've. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. In fact, I've got a couple of his videos. How about that?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I'll be darned. Yeah. Have you ever been to one of his concerts?
No, sadly. I have never had that opportunity. But he's done a couple of things that I really, really, really love. And
yeah.
So I'd love to have him on. See, I didn't know the rest of his background was so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The fact that I'm kind of a tropical nut and would love to spend some time in those little latitudes close to the equator. And he's been all around the world, and some of his music is totally inspirational and just wonderful to listen to. And I just wanted to call.
Well, I agree with that.
And say that I love your show. I've been working the swing shift here in Eugene, Oregon. This is Mike, by the way, and I've been working the swing shift. I've been listening to the show, and I just love it.
Well, it passes the hours, doesn't it?
Oh, it surely does. Yeah, it's a great spot in my insomnia.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much. A high spot in your insomnia, huh? Sure, I'd love to have him on. I had no idea about that additional background, but I've saved a bunch of Jimmy Buffett videos that I got years and years ago. I taped from MTV. Really good stuff. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine.
Very, very good program tonight.
Thank you.
And I just, most of the time, I find you a very intellectual man.
Sometimes
very smart man.
Sometimes a total bum, though, huh?
But tonight, I must disagree with you, sir.
Oh, see, I knew it was coming. All right.
You have a minute to discuss it.
Yeah, sure. Fire away.
I happen to have a young daughter.
Okay.
I happen to be a married man, and I'm sure you're a married man.
I am, yes.
That show that you find so intriguing, sir, it degrades women.
Well, what show are you talking about?
You're talking How to Marry Millionaires.
Oh, How to Marry... No. Who wants to marry a multimillionaire?
Yes, sir.
I thought, when I saw that show, I thought, man, cheesy, really a cheesy show. How are they ever going to pull that off without it looking really cheesy? And I thought it was going to be a disaster. And, of course, it has turned into one now. But the show itself was rather, I didn't think it was degrading.
Well, when you see a bunch of women parading up and answering questions in bikinis and all this,
yeah.
It's no better than going into an auction of a bunch of cattle.
Well, yes, it is. I mean, you know, if they were just cattle, you'd be looking at their teeth, and I guess judging their weight and trying to figure out whether they'd have tender steaks or tough steaks or whatever. That isn't what to do with a woman. I mean, I grant you it was pretty surface stuff, but I don't know. It was an intriguing concept that turned out to be a total disaster.
But you know what would be better?
What?
If they had How to Marry a Poor Man and Live a Life of Happiness for the Rest of Your Life.
Yeah. I wonder how many, thank you, entrants they would have to that. I wonder who dreamed that show up in the first place. I wonder a lot of things about that show. And, of course, there are things coming out about it now that are somewhat horrific, if true. And I wonder how it's going to end up. I wonder a lot of things about it. I thought the show itself came off rather well. And that was a big surprise to me, because I was looking for a big disaster, which it has only become in retrospect, with what's come out since. Not the show itself. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Art, this is J.D. in Nashville.
Hello, J.D. How you doing?
I'm doing all right there, but you had probably a month or two ago, you had a woman on there that was your guest that was talking about the Antichrist and all that, and I can't remember what her name was, but she claimed that she let the dog out in the middle of the night, and he was standing in the front yard and all that. You remember that?
Oh, yes, of course.
What was her name? Do you remember?
Give me a second. How could I forget? I've had so many emails and faxes about that.
It was an excellent show.
Yeah, it was an excellent show, and we're going to have her on again. But I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's if you had not asked, I would not have forgotten.
Right. Well, what I was wanting to know is, I was wanting to know if I could get a copy of that show on tape somehow.
Yes. You can get tapes of shows we have done with guests by calling 1-800-917-4278.
4278.
That's right.
Okay. And if you remember that on that show, she was saying how she thought she had figured out who he was going to be.
Yes.
And then when he appeared to her in the yard, it was who she thought it was.
That's right.
Did she ever mention during the conversation that night, did she ever mention if it would be somebody that you and I would recognize?
I'm trying to. I don't think that I think I did ask that, actually, and I think her response was yes.
The response was yes?
That's my recollection. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, and she that her name will occur to me in a minute. A million people are going to send it to me right away. But that was a big show, and she, of course, was a close confidant of Father Malachi Martin's. And in a lot of ways, tracks right along with Father Martin, and we'll have her on again. She was a rare find. That all being said, I've still forgotten her name. Bust of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Debbie from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello, Debbie.
Hey, FYI. Hey, 3 weeks ago, I don't know if you heard anybody from Phoenix, because that guy's doing that court case here about the UFOs, but on the local Fox 10 news channel, one of the pilots that had been called to intersect that object on March 13th.
You're kidding. They had a pilot on?
Yeah.
Now, there was no, there, see, as far as I knew, there was no intercept plane scrambled, but now you're saying there was.
Yeah, there's two F-16s from Luke Air Force Base that came to intercept it.
Well, now, why would they need to intercept flares?
Well, the thing of it is, he said they went up, he had the actual recording that he had turned in to Fox 10. Okay, and
did you hear it?
Yes, I did.
And
he said that he came upon this thing that would look like a big black triangle, and it was as big as a football field. It scared the bejesus out of him.
This is an F-16 pilot.
Yeah.
And it's a radio transmitter.
A colonel that had been in the Air Force for 20 years with an impeccable record.
Right.
And he turned the tape over to the newscast. They played it for 2 weeks on the local Channel 10 and ABC News.
Well, I sure would like to get a copy of that.
Well, if you called the Fox 10 or ABC Channel 15 here local, I'm sure they can give you that.
All right, let me see. Let me pursue that, because I covered that event as it occurred, as you know. And I don't ever recall anything about an intercept, a couple of intercept planes. I recall a statement from a control tower operator who saw the object but did not see it on radar. Remember that? I remember just a whole parcel of eyewitness reports, many of them very reliable. I remember two events, one about 8:30 and then one later, about 10:30. But I don't recall intercepts being sent up. So if they were, and that aired in Phoenix, I sure would like that audio, and I sure would like my audience to hear it. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Okay.
This is Mark calling from Appleton, Wisconsin.
Yes, sir.
620 WTMJ. Hey, I was just wondering, I'm going for John McCain myself, and I think he's going to be a good pick, and also I'm one of them truck drivers, too, one of them independents, and we're really losing our butts big time.
Oh, you're a trucker?
Yeah, you bet.
The government has got to do something about that, like now.
Oh, yeah, they got to lower the tax or something.
Yeah, they actually have that power. Now, if there were not a giant tax attached that they could remove, particularly, you know, with the... with the surplus budget that we've got right now,
mm-hmm.
they can afford to do that. And so as a short-term measure, they damn well ought to do it and do it quickly so that there's not a big problem in this country over trucking. So it's just that simple.
Oh, I got a lot of buddies that had their trucks repoed already and everything. You know, it's just a couple more months and this crap is going to hit the fan, you know.
I know. Well, they've got no idea what is looming. If trucking were to come to a screeching halt in America, America would come to a screeching halt.
Oh, you bet. Immediately.
Okay, thank you. It's that serious. And the truckers are not telling stories. You know, this isn't somebody screaming without cause. They really are that close to the bone. And a lot of the trucks are going to stop. They're going to get parked. And when things aren't hauled, well, you know, it's a lot of disagreeable things are going to occur. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello. I just wanted to mention the lady's name was Kathleen Keating.
Of course. Thank you.
And I listened to the program also a couple weeks ago. My name's Julie.
Right, Julie.
I'm calling from Las Vegas. And I really enjoyed the show. I even ordered her book, so I'm waiting to...
Yeah, that was one of those, you get done with it and you keep thinking about it for a long time shows.
Yeah, I've been wanting my husband to listen to the show, but he's kind of afraid to listen to that kind of stuff. So.
Not a lot of people are.
Yeah. That's all I wanted to tell you.
All right, Kathleen Keating. Thank you very much indeed, Kathleen Keating. Now, so you don't have to email me or fax me. You know, it was one of those shows, and she was one of those ladies, and it was interesting how we found each other. I have to tell you that story the next time we have her on. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, hi, Art. Hey, did you have a chance to see the CNN video screen capture of the Democratic debate and the image in between Gore and Bradley?
No.
Well, I said it twice on email to you, and I sent two faxes to you. You got to check it out because this is so perfect for your show tonight.
You're telling me what kind of image, please?
It looks I know this is going to sound nuts. It's kind of funny. It looks exactly like a demon. Just go to your email. It'll say demonic image at Democratic debate. And you click on there. And actually what happened was right between them there's... oh, no, Art, I'm telling you, you are going to love this.
Now, how are we to know that you did not do this up in Photoshop?
Well, you could just get the people have seen it on this as it was running on CNN live.
So, in other words, you're saying you can take the original CNN footage.
Yes, and it's right there.
And it's right there. Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
What it is a pattern. I would imagine how they designed it was a pattern of faint stars in the background. But when you look at the bottom of how when it comes together, Art, I'm telling you, you're going to love this image.
Now, as you consider the demonic image, was it looking more toward Bradley or more toward Gore? Could you tell?
It was looking straight ahead.
Straight ahead. Hobbs choice.
You're going to love it.
All right.
Your email. I got it there.
All right. If it's really good, we'll put it up.
Oh, it's really good.
All right. Thank you. Really? All right. I will take a look as soon as I get off the air, which is in minutes. Demonic image, huh, at the Democrats' debate. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Art.
Yes.
Great to hear you.
And to you. Hear you as well. Where are you?
I'm in Philadelphia, PA. My name is Marcus, listening to you on PHT.
WPHT, the monster.
Yeah, it just keeps broadcasting.
Yes, it does.
Places you wouldn't think.
It's probably got one of the biggest reach signals of any commercial broadcast station in the U.S. I guess there would be a lot of argument about that, but PHT is definitely, would be among the top four contenders for the biggest signal.
It really comes in clear. I know there's not a lot of time, but quickly, last time I spoke to you was, I hate to bring it up, a couple of years ago, and it was the night that you unfortunately went outside to take your usual break, not realizing there was a 4-foot drop.
Oh, that night.
Yeah.
I really hurt myself badly.
And you came back on the air.
I did.
Followed you about 45 minutes. You still came back on.
I did, and I actually didn't know how seriously I was hurt.
You were very blessed. You said about a few inches away from a spike in the ground or something.
Like about 1 inch. You know, they had these, they had poured the cement, and they had these metal stanchions or whatever you call them that will hold the vertical 2x4s.
Right.
And if I had come down on one of those, it would have been Art the Impaled.
I don't think you want that as the title of your fourth book.
No. Actually, no, Art the Impaled.
That particular night, I had mentioned that the way I found out about your program was through a book, which was written by Mark Missler and Chuck Eastman. The book was called Alien Encounters.
Yes, and they mentioned
me
in
the book.
They
had a chapter in there called The Quickening and
right.
referred to you. Had you ever had a chance to read that?
You know what? I have not.
Art, it's really good reading, and you had the interview, which I really enjoyed. The very next night, after your incident, I don't think you came on the next night, and they repeated the entire interview you did with both of them.
Yes, the next night I was contemplating my own mortality. Putting mildly, I hurt everywhere.
Well, fortunately, you survived that, and it sounds like a lot more. What I wanted to say also, I listened to the other night you did an interview with Reasons to Believe people.
That's right.
I have to commend you. That first 45 minutes, I mean, you should be at the United Nations negotiating. how you diplomatically, I mean, these people, all you were asking is, does God hear prayers from other people other than Christians? And they couldn't answer the question. 45 minutes you spent. As polite as possible. And,
yes.
And it was a waste of time. They couldn't just come out with yes, no, or we don't know, you know?
But the fact of the matter is, in order for that to come across to you, the listener,
yes.
I would like to point out, it is not necessary to be jumping all over somebody. In fact, when you just do it calmly and reasonably,
mm-hmm.
then the message couldn't come through stronger, as evidenced by your call just now.
Right.
All right?
So now you
understand a little bit of the why I interview in the manner that I do.
I give you total commendation for that. That was so well done how you handled it. I
appreciate that. Listen, show's over. Tell them all good night.
Oh, okay. Also, if David Icke's out there, why don't you come back on the show? Good night, everybody.
That's it. Later, everybody, from the high desert where it's about to rain, cats and dogs. Good night.